OTC is go.
Thank you, this is go.
ETC is go.
Copy, this is go.
Houston flight is go.
Polycom.
STM is go.
Safety comp is go.
STU is go.
LRD is go.
SRO is go.
CDR is go.
Launch director NTD, our launch team is ready to proceed at this time.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Site Patriots has a message for liberals and the mainstream media.
You can't handle the truth.
So, buckle up, snowflakes, because we're about to deliver the politically direct best in conservative commentary, news, and investigative reports. We're telling the truth, and we're not gonna stop. Okay, liberals, back under the bridge with the rest of your fellow trolls, and oh yeah, thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots.
They are special, special people
on RSPRadio1.com. Welcome to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor, Friday night edition of the show, 9th of April. Hello, Diane.
Hello, Craig, and how are you this evening?
Well, you know what? I'm doing pretty good. This morning, I watched the Crew Dragon SpaceX take off with the Axiom crew. First all-private crew heading to the space station.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Very smooth launch. Very smooth.
Yeah, I saw it on tape this afternoon.
You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like there's been a whole plethora of space-oriented news lately.
Yes, there has been, especially, you know, with the new telescope out there. It was reported that we have now seen the farthest galaxy ever.
Yeah.
I mean, that is amazing, and the pictures were amazing, and then the Perseverance, or the little helicopter, I should say, is doing wonderful. The Perseverance rover actually found its own parachute.
Yeah, I know, I saw that.
Is that cool or what? I mean, we're moving along there with, you know, space, and there's been a lot of conferences that the people involved have had to go to lately, including a big JPL conference last week. I mean, our space program is, albeit quietly, it is moving along. Now, when Trump gets back in 2024, I would expect a real big push.
Well, yeah, I think so. And you look at just some of the stuff that's been cropping up in the news, you know, and we try to keep some of that up in the front when we, you know, go to the RSPRadio1.com website. We try to put that in the science news or maybe the technology news, you know, different things, because there's been so much of it lately.
Yeah, and also admit we put it up there because we are space geeks.
Yeah, we kind of like it. We dig it, you know.
Yes. Yes. Some know I'm actually connected to the space program, so for me it's must report on.
Well, my people came here from space, so I.
Oh, that's true.
Well, I got that going.
You're a resident alien.
Yes, I you know, I kind of am.
Yes.
I kind of am. Folks, we got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight other than space geek stuff, which I'm sure between Diane and myself, we could fill up a whole show.
Absolutely. And it would probably be a lot more entertaining than the things, unfortunately, we're being forced to report on, like Ukraine.
Well, yeah, and Ukraine, regrettably, is back in the news again for all the wrong reasons. This time, a train station got destroyed. The body count is going up and up and up. And I got to tell you, President Zelensky was there, and there are some photos taken. And, I mean, you can tell this is wearing on him.
Yeah, he looks like he's aged about 10 years, and it's, of course, all from stress. But that man should be admired by anyone that understands and values freedom. Because he is not only the flag bearer for Ukraine, but he is basically, I consider to be, in line to be the world leader, because we're sure not anymore.
No.
NATO is a joke, basically, except for Poland. Poland is doing terrific. France is on the cusp of possibly electing a pro-Putin next president.
Yeah, can you believe that?
Yeah, very scary situation, folks, in Europe. And the world needs more Zelenskys.
Well, and then I saw today another country has stepped up to help Ukraine. I believe it was Slovakia has stepped up, and they are providing Ukraine with a whole bunch of Soviet-era S-300 surface-to-air missiles.
Yes. And all the stuff that we have promised still hasn't gotten there.
Yeah, go figure, right?
Yeah, they talk, you know, Biden talks the talk, but he's not delivering what Zelensky needs. I will give total kudos to the First Nation that gives them the planes that he has been begging for.
I'll tell you what, I wish somebody would. I really do. I mean, look, they're getting the bejesus bombed out of them.
Yes.
Okay. Now, on the ground, from the ground, the Ukrainians are holding pretty tough.
Yeah.
I mean, they're chasing some of those tanks out of there. Here's something I saw a photo of today that really struck me, because it's kind of the collision of three cultures.
Okay.
Now, you've seen photos of the army tanks, the Russian tanks that have been disabled, right?
Oh, of course. Yes.
Okay. Way back in the, you know, 20, 25, 30 years ago, whenever it was, there was a movie with Patrick Swayze called Red Dawn.
Yes.
Okay. And in that movie, the Russians invade the U.S. And this ragtag bunch of kids actually hold them off. Okay. Now, the kids, Patrick Swayze being one of them, they called themselves the Wolverines. Okay. Because that was the mascot at their high school. Right.
Okay.
On one of these disabled tanks that has been abandoned in Ukraine, somebody spray painted Wolverines on it.
Cool.
And if that's not the culmination of three cultures, you know, the U.S. movie culture, the Ukraine, we're not giving up culture, and the Russians doing what the Russians are doing. And I mean, I saw that photo today and I was just amazed by it. I mean, here's a movie that's 30 years old. Most people have forgotten about it. You know, a lot of people saw it back in the day, and it does have kind of a cult following today, but for the people of Ukraine to paint Wolverines on the side of a Russian tank, I thought, wow, that is ballsy.
That really is. And it's one of the good things, you know, one of the few good things Hollywood has done that another country has picked up on. It basically shows the little guy can be victorious. And what people don't understand with Ukraine right now, yes, there's some Ukrainian military, but a good percentage of those fighting the Russians are civilians.
Yeah, and they're doing it any way they can.
Yes. Yeah, and you know what's interesting coming out of all this is the whole concept of war crimes. And, you know, Joe Biden, I don't even know if he really knew what he was saying when he accused Putin of being a war criminal. I kind of think it was a spur of the moment, little bit of lucidity coming out of him. Because as far as I'm concerned, Vladimir Putin is indeed a war criminal because, and you can see it for yourself, folks, the Russian army doesn't do anything without a go-ahead from the top.
That's a fact.
Okay. The generals on the field, yeah, they have some leeway, but they can't do anything without Putin's okay. That's just how the Russian system is set up. So here it is. You see pictures now of Ukrainian citizens with their hands tied behind their back, old men, young men, women who have been raped, their heads shaved for shame. You see those pictures with bullet holes in the back of their heads. That is Hitler-type actions. And what Putin is doing is channeling his inner Hitler to a degree. And I do believe he is targeting ethnic Ukrainians for genocide.
You know, genocide is a word that's getting thrown around quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those words, kind of like the word treason, where people tend to throw it around fast and loose. And a lot of times, it doesn't really apply to what people are trying to describe. In this case, I think it does.
Yes. Yeah. You know, a war crime is definitely bombing a children and maternity hospital. There's no other way, you know, to describe that. They meant to kill children, to kill just born babies, to kill pregnant women. That's reminiscent of Hitler tactics.
Well, and when you go through the streets of Bucha, and you're just literally dragging people out of their homes and into the streets and executing them, and you're doing it to send a signal to other people, you either fall in line or do what we tell you, or we'll do this to you.
Right.
You know, that's the, you know, and it, when it's indiscriminate and it's meant in the way it's meant, and then you bomb a train station of people that are just trying to get the hell out of there.
Right. After saying you were going to allow escape corridors.
Right. I mean, how else are you supposed to look at it other than genocide?
Right. You can't. The only difference is, you know, he might not be throwing people into ovens, but he's doing just about everything else.
Let's clear up that, too, while we're at it. Okay. He's not throwing them into ovens in the way Hitler did, but he is trying to incinerate the bodies and the evidence.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. And so, covering for his own casualty amount by by basically cremating the bodies of his own soldiers right on scene.
But, you know, early on in this, and let's face it, we're only 45 days into this. Okay. But early on, if you go back 3 weeks, 4 weeks ago, let's say go back a month, 4 weeks. Okay. That's when we first found out that he was sending these mobile crematoriums into those areas. Right. And we thought, well, this is so he can burn the dead Russian soldiers. They don't have to take them back and they don't have to account for them. But now it's starting to look more like, hey, we're going to put these things out there and use these to cover up our war crimes first. And then if we can throw some dead Russian soldiers in there too, because life doesn't mean anything to people that are involved in genocide. But now it looks like the primary reason for having those there is to destroy the evidence of the criminal activity they're engaged in.
Exactly. And with that, Craig, I'm going to ask you a question, but I'm going to preface it with a little information here. Now, it was the Geneva Convention and the Geneva Protocol that established international legal standards for warfare. Now, any violation of those standards is considered to be a war crime and can be prosecuted at the International Criminal Court in The Hague. and can result in the imprisonment or the death of the perpetrators. Now, my question to you is, do you think when the Ukraine war does end, and all wars, guys, eventually end, and there's always someone a victor and always someone a loser, do you think in the end anyone is going to have the gall or the balls, to put it bluntly, to actually bring Putin up on war crime charges?
I don't. Okay, you don't. I do. Okay, but I'll tell you how this is going to work. So it's okay. going to be basically meaningless if I'm right. Okay.
Okay.
When this is over, and possibly even before it's over, but at least when it's over, I think Vladimir Putin will be brought up on war crime charges. Okay. I think there will be a tribunal at The Hague, but he will be tried in absentia.
Of course.
Okay. Of course. And my guess is, if he's still alive, okay, this mm-hmm. is all predicated on if somebody doesn't take him out, right?
Mm-hmm.
If he's still alive, they will try him in absentia. He will be found guilty, and then he will become an international criminal. Now, right. the question at that point, or an international fugitive, well, you know, however you want to label it. So the question at that point then becomes, will anybody have the balls to go get him? And the answer is no.
Okay. I think if there is a high enough price on his head, you will find mercenaries that might be willing to do it. But I also see another scenario. And I'm not saying yours is wrong. There's very strong possibilities to what you said. However, when someone is so gung-ho on winning, and they must win at all costs, and they must commit atrocity after atrocity, they know what's going to happen if they are tried, even in absentia. They know there's always going to be a price on their head. Someone who is narcissistic enough to do what Putin is doing, might in the very end take their own life and become a martyr for the cause.
That is possible, okay? I mean, Hitler did it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it is possible. I don't foresee that with Putin. Putin can lose this war and still maintain a grip on Russia. The difference there was Germany was being overrun by the Allies, by Americans, by the British, and, of course, by the Russians.
Right.
Okay, and they were all, Berlin was surrounded. There was no way out. The war was over. It was just a matter of mopping things up at that point, and Hitler was not going to have any command over Germany when it was all said and done. He knew it. Okay. Now, Hitler was also crazy. Okay, let's face it. He was suffering from all sorts of things. Syphilis probably being one of them. But,
yes.
It's a different story for Vladimir Putin. He can lose this war and still maintain an iron grip on Russia. So I don't know. I mean, it's possible. What you're saying is possible. You can't count it out, but I don't foresee it.
You got to put this into the mix too. Even if he comes out in one piece, basically, and still has a grip on Russia, if the sanctions are still in place, Russians are going to be hurting bad, real bad. So that can turn the tables a little bit as his own people start ganging up on him.
Well,
calling for his arrest, actually overthrowing him, or maybe the Russians themselves will take him out. There's so many possibilities that can happen here.
Right, and you can't really discount any of them. What you're describing there would be a Russian spring.
Yes.
Okay. And, a populist uprising against the government and against the leader in this case, Vladimir Putin. It's possible, but if the military, if the bulk of the now there will always be certain members of the military that will side with the populist uprising, but the bulk of the military is going to stick with Putin because they figure that's where the real power is. And so it's anybody's guess, but it's wide open.
But what kind of power, if he's still a pariah on the world stage?
He always will be.
And especially, remember, the UN just threw Russia off the Human Rights Council.
Right.
So what kind of power is someone that's a pariah going really to wield? Even China is starting to back off of their support for Russia.
Well,
what happens then? Who's he left with? Syria, North Korea, and Iran?
Yeah. China will always be there. You know, they may not be as strong or as bold as they are or have been in supporting Russia, but they'll always be there. But, you know, you ask what kind of power would he actually have? Well, what kind of power did Pol Pot have? You know, what kind of power did Mao have? I mean, you know, what kind of power did Stalin have? You can go down the line of despots and dictators.
Putin is not. Look, you can say what you want about Stalin, but he was a very smart man, and he was militarily very smart. Doesn't mean he was right, but it just means that he was smart. Putin does not, or has not till this point, reached the power that Stalin had.
Right. And that's because current-day Russia is not what the Soviet Union was.
Exactly.
And you know, from an economic standpoint and a world stage standpoint, you know, and that sort of thing. But, you know, unlike some of the other despots and dictators that I mentioned, Putin's got nuclear arms, okay?
Putin has nuclear arms, but so do his adversaries.
Right,
NATO has them. We have them. We're at a tit-for-tat as far as the whole nuclear discussion goes, because they can wipe us out, we can wipe them out. You're sort of at a stalemate there.
Yes, but that is the type of power that Putin would have when this thing is over. He would have that stalemate power. Look, he's got his, right? He's got his money. You know, he's wealthy beyond belief. So, you know, do we think at this point Putin gives a damn what happens to the people of his country? Obviously not.
No.
Okay.
But I think Putin cares about his legacy and history.
His legacy is shot.
But I think he cares how history sees him. Remember, he thinks that history is going to see him as the reinstaller of the great Russian Empire. That's what he envisions.
Yeah,
take that away from a man that is so narcissistic in that belief, you might be looking at a man that might take his own life to become a martyr for the cause.
He might, yeah. You can't say he won't do it. Okay, I just don't foresee it at this point, and I'll tell you why. And you hit on the key, Diane, you really did. You know, in his mind,
right,
he's still in full control of this thing. In his mind, he's still winning this thing. In his mind, he is going to be the next Stalin. You know, it's all in his mind. You know, yes, he wants history to perceive him in a certain way, but more importantly, he perceives himself in that way, and he doesn't really, you know, what the world sees and how history actually portrays him doesn't matter to him as long as he sees himself in that light.
See, the problem is, though, as he's losing more and more to the Ukrainians, he is becoming more and more vicious.
Right.
He's grasping at straws. No matter if he wins in the end, he's not really ever going to win, because he will never garner all of Ukraine. He might get the regions he wants, but he has lost face, basically, because he is not going to be able to capture Kiev. He is not going to get the major part of Ukraine. And that's going to stick at him. Remember, this man is so narcissistic, like you said, that he thinks, you know, he's going to be a Stalin. You know, he's going to be a czar. He's going to be Nicholas, whatever he thinks. His thinking is becoming tainted by his own narcissistic drive for basically historical immortality.
Yes, exactly my point. Exactly my point. He will let his own people starve. And I mean, look at little Kim in North Korea. He's letting his people starve, you know, and you look at Stalin, you look at Lenin, you look at Pol Pot. I mean, again, go down the list, run down the list of despots and dictators, and you'll see this pattern that quickly shows itself. And Putin is no different in that respect. He has got himself backed into a corner here, and he's surrounded by his own landmines. You know, the only way he can win is the absolute total obliteration of Ukraine.
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. Okay, if he ever does get to the point where he concedes in his own mind that he's never going to have it, he's going to leave a scorched earth policy the likes of which this world has never seen.
Yeah. I don't think he'll do it with nukes. I think he'll do it with chemical weapons.
Chemical weapons, conventional weapons. He will do virtually to every city in Ukraine what they've done so far on the very eastern and southern edge. Mariupol is a perfect example.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's totally gone, basically.
And he will do that to every city and town. He will make it so that there is no place in Ukraine that's livable for anyone.
Well, you know what that brings me back down to? You know, we used to be the world's hero, and now we're basically a laughingstock on the world stage. We went from hero status, the knights, you know, charging in on the white horses to save the day, Superman to save the day. I mean, the world counted when the chips were really down on the United States coming to the rescue. And unfortunately, we're going to be casualties of Putin's war as well, because we are not the heroes right now. We are nothing right now. Yes, you know, we're sending humanitarian aid and all that, but the promises Biden made, they're not being kept. He's not pushing for us to really help the Ukrainians like we should. And I am not against our military going in if it's voluntary.
I agree with you. You know, we've only got about a minute and a half left in this segment, but you brought something up, and I don't want to just gloss over it with just that one mention. The UN has kicked Russia off the Human Rights Council. Now, you know how bad it is. You know how bad Russia's actions are, Putin's actions are. When the United Nations of thugs, thieves, and despots doesn't want you on the Human Rights Council, because you look at that council, and there are some real bad actors on that council.
Oh, absolutely.
And when they kick you off, you must have gone so far over the line, there is no looking back.
No, and it was a very strange vote, but they did reach their two-thirds majority. 93 countries voted in favor of kicking Russia off. 24 voted against it, the usual group of players, and 58 abstained from voting. How you can abstain after seeing the videos, the pictures, the eyewitness testimony, how you can sit back and remain neutral to this?
I can tell you how. I can tell
you
how. That's right. They're a bunch of nutless wonders.
Exactly.
They don't like what Putin's doing. They know it's wrong. They see how bad it is. And yet they're afraid if they vote to expel Russia from the Human Rights Council, Putin will take it out on them.
Exactly. Putin is running the show, folks. NATO is not running it. The United States, we sure are not running it. Putin is not only running the war, he's dictating how the war can and cannot be fought.
And that's got to stop.
It's got to stop immediately. But it's not going to stop with the Biden or the Harris administration. We need to do something here. And I'm going to come back and say again, the military in our own country has to get involved. Whether it's volunteer, I'm talking about going into Ukraine, helping these people, helping the Ukrainian fighters. You don't want to do it, you know, legally, use your air quotes there. Ask for volunteers. I guarantee you, you would get a lot of our military willing to help the Ukrainians.
You know, it's going to be interesting. I mean, like I said, we're 45 days in.
Right.
Okay, which is not very long.
It's very long for the Ukrainians.
I was just going to say, unless you happen to live in Ukraine. Okay, So it's going to be interesting over the next few weeks to see how this plays out. But we have run out of time in this segment, which means we have to take a bottom of the hour break, get in a couple of station IDs, but we also have another segment to go. So stay with us. There's more Right Side Patriots after this.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sori. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Hi, guys. Diane Sori from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out the National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
Welcome back to rspradio1.com. It's the Right Side Patriots. Craig Andreessen from the National Patriot, Diane Sori from the Patriot Factor. It is the Friday night edition of the show. And folks, if you missed any part of that first segment, holy cow, did you ever miss a lot?
Yes.
Now, you don't have to miss out on it because you can go to rspradio1.com tomorrow morning, click on the podcast button, and you're there. We're there. We're all there together. You can listen to this show tomorrow morning.
Get it up first thing in the morning.
Doesn't cost you anything. You don't have to sign up. You don't have to give us any of your personal information. Just click the button.
And all our shows are on there. We've been on a long time. Craig and I together have worked as Right Side Patriots for about 8 years. Our beginning shows are still on YouTube. And the ones before we actually own this radio station, We've been on American Patriot Radio, and what was the other one?
C something.
Yeah, Michael's station. I forget the name of it. And all our shows can be accessed right from the very first one.
CTR. Conservative
CPR,
Talk Radio.
Right. CPR. Citizens Patriot Radio.
Yeah, something like that. Mm-hmm. Conservative Patriot Radio. I don't remember. But it's been too many years. I don't remember.
I know. 8 years we've been doing this.
We've still got topics to talk about tonight, Diane. And one of them I think we got to get into a little bit here is the Hunter Biden laptop story.
I know. Craig, you and I wrote about it. Told the truth about it years ago. And only now are the major networks, you know, giving validity to what we talked about years ago.
Right. It's wild, isn't it? And
it's very wild.
The mainstream media reaction to what's going on now with the Hunter Biden laptop thing, which, let's face it, the whole laptop situation is kind of in limbo. There's bits and pieces that continue to leak out, but it's, to those of us who've been following it for 2 years, it's nothing new.
Right.
You know, but to the mainstream media, it's breaking news. Yeah.
Right. And you know what's funny? This, in a way, ties into what's happening to you in Ukraine now, and people need to understand this. Back when Papa Joe and his ne'er-do-well son, Hunter, were doing dirty dealings with Ukraine was when Joe was vice president under Obama. Okay. Obama supported the president who was the president then of Ukraine. People now are saying, oh, Zelensky's just as corrupt. No, he is not. He was not around at the time that the dirty dealings with the Hunter laptop
right.
happened. He only became president of Ukraine in mid-2019, after Obama was out, after Biden was out, and everybody was covering up for Hunter. These people, a lot of them on Facebook and MeWe, cannot separate the time frame. And that time frame is critical.
I think they can separate the time frame. I think they don't want to separate the time frame. I think we're talking about a bunch of never-Trumpers. I think we're talking about a bunch of liberals masquerading as conservatives.
And I'll add something else. We're also talking about a number of anti-Semites because Zelensky is Jewish. And a good part of his family was killed by Hitler back in World War II. And they don't like that a Jew is suddenly becoming the leader of the free world in a way.
Yeah, it rubs them the wrong way.
Exactly.
You know, but now this story, the Hunter Biden laptop story, is getting real interesting to me because the way the media is reacting to what is leaking out right now. There was one woman, I think she works for the New York Times, but don't quote me on that. She came out yesterday and said, well, there's just nothing interesting about it. There's just nothing interesting. Yeah, her name is Applebaum. And said, yeah, there's just nothing, you know, the reason we're not covering it, it's just not, it's boring. It's not interesting. Well, there's been other people in the mainstream media that have come out and called it not a story. They say it's not a story. Well, NPR, you can't get much more liberal than NPR, right?
True.
There's a woman there, Laura Sullivan. Okay, she is an investigative reporter at NPR. And she is absolutely blasting NPR, her employer, for saying that it's not a real story. She said, what it's always been is a story. And she's outing NPR executives for putting the lid on this thing 2 years ago and saying, you know, the Hunter Biden laptop investigation at best is going to wind up being a tax case. It's not really a story. It's a distraction. We don't need to cover it. Okay. I mean, but now the distraction is that the liberal media is still mostly refusing to cover it for what it actually is.
Yes. And there are things that are surfacing, including the thank you letter from Vadim Pozharsky. He was a big shot in Ukraine, you know, not on the good side, thanking Hunter for inviting him to D.C. to have a meeting with Daddy.
Guy.
The big guy.
You know, and now we also know of the now two letters of reference to Hunter Biden's Chinese business partners, to their sons. He Joe wrote letters of reference trying to get them into a couple of big colleges.
Yes.
And they didn't get into either one. So that kind of tells you what kind of pull the former vice president had, because these were done after Biden left office as vice president. And right. But, you know, can you imagine? Can you imagine if Donald Trump had written letters of reference to people right. connected to the Chinese Communist Party, the CCP? Holy yeah. crap.
Yep. This goes so deep, and there were so many meetings between the Bidens and the Ukrainians. They met at Como Lake. They met at the White House. They met at hotels. They met all over the place. And Hunter Biden, who had no energy experience whatsoever, remember, that's what the whole Burisma thing is, the energy company, they paid him $50,000 a month for doing nothing.
Yeah, good gig if you can get it.
Absolutely. You know, but in the bad sense, folks. I mean, this reeks of dirty, dirty dealings.
Well, totally. don't forget Tony Bobulinski.
Right.
He was there for a lot of those meetings. He blew the whistle 2 years ago. The mainstream media completely ignored him. Ah, nah, he's just a plant. He's just talking out his ass.
We put up that video on our website.
Yeah. So you've got his stories, which are now all being corroborated by the actual emails that have been leaking out.
Yes.
You know, the big guy's Joe Biden, you know, and we got Joe for 2 years. I never talked to my son about his business deals. Bull crap, you didn't.
They've got it now. They've got the emails on it. And what's really funny, and don't forget Devin Archer as well.
Good point.
There's so many ties here. This is not a tax issue, folks. This is violation of RICO laws. This is dealing from positions of power, which is against everything we stand for. This is buying favors.
It's influence peddling at the highest level.
Influence peddling, yeah. This is so serious, but the problem is Obama's going to call out his people. We need to, you know, tone this down a bit, whatever. Hunter's going to be scrambling for any help he can get. Do you think Hunter's going to receive jail time or Joe's going to be kicked out of office? No. They're going to cover it somehow.
You know, there's any number of things at this point that could get Joe kicked out of office, and this is one of them. Not that it stands a big chance. The 25th Amendment's got a better chance of kicking him out of office than this does. But
yeah, if Joe Biden now says, I don't remember, he might be telling the truth.
He might be. But, you know, not only is Hunter Biden influence peddling and using his father's name and his father's political position and connections to further his own business interests, but 10% of it was going back to Joe.
Right. The big guy.
You know? So not only you got Hunter influence peddling, you got Joe profiting off of it.
Right.
And all these emails and all this stuff, it's leaking out in drips and drabs, but it's all there, and it's all stuff we were talking about 2 years ago that the mainstream media wouldn't touch.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a very interesting thing now. Some of the GOP leaders are demanding that the so-called experts who dismissed Hunter Biden's laptop, you know, come out, tell the truth, and if they don't, that they are going to be subpoenaed themselves.
Which could get really, really interesting.
Very interesting.
You know, and after the elections in November and a new Congress is seated next January, the House is going to be very, very red. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the House
Intel. If we don't blow it,
the House Intel Committee is where those investigations take place. So the hot seat could get really toasty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is interesting. Now, you've got mainstream media still, by and large, denying there's really anything to it. Yeah, some of them are mentioning, oh, yeah, the Durham report, you know, Durham released this or that. But, you know, that doesn't really prove anything. You know, Joe wasn't really involved. You know, they're still trying to cover this thing up.
Right.
But outside the mainstream media, you've got social media.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go looking down the long list of social media malfeasance, okay, well, right at the top of the list are two big players, Facebook and Twitter. So if
yes.
we look at Twitter, Jack Dorsey was the head of Twitter back in those days, a couple of years ago. And it was Jack Dorsey's decision back then that if you bring up Hunter and his laptop on Twitter, we're going to ban you from Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Jack Dorsey is now saying, oops, well, I guess maybe we shouldn't have done that. Of course, he can say that because he's not in power anymore. But I think we know who is in power at Twitter.
Yes, and that is none other than the great Elon Musk. This man basically slapped the Democrats in the face when he pulled Tesla out of California, went to the red state of Texas, and now owns, I believe it's 9.6% of Twitter. He is the largest single owner of Twitter, and he is demanding changes be made.
Well, not only is he the largest shareholder in Twitter, he also now has a seat on the board.
A seat on the board, exactly.
And that's huge because there's a guy at Twitter by the name of Jay Haller, okay? And mm-hmm. this guy is one of these far left-wing lunatics over there at Twitter. And he's a big player at Twitter. And he put out a series of tweets over the last couple of days. He's melting down. He is literally melting down. He says that having Elon Musk on the board is wrecking him.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's just some snowflake. You know, you kind of, you know, you listen to it, you let it go in one ear and out the other. But what I find really interesting is what has happened since he's gotten his foot into Twitter. And just in the span of 4 days, folks, Elon Musk has managed to catch the eye of regulators via the Securities and Exchange Commission. His poll of 80.9 million Twitter followers got to vote on how they felt regarding an edit button for Twitter. And he actually tops Amazon's Jeff Bezos as the richest human on the planet. And more power to him.
Well, in this Haller character over there is tweeting out articles one titled The Coming Collapse of Elon Musk.
Yeah.
He's calling Musk a misogynist, calling him sadistic, calling him a transphobe. Joy Reid over on MSNBC a couple of nights ago was calling him a racist.
Oh, God. That's all they know is racist, racist, racists.
You know, the left is in absolute panic mode over the idea that Elon Musk might turn Twitter into a free speech portal.
I know. And with their edit button doing more than just editing type.
You know, it's absolutely incredible what has happened at Twitter in the past week, you know, and Musk is like, you know, we're gonna make some changes over there.
Yeah. And he'll do it.
Stand by for Trump. He'll bring Trump back to Twitter.
That's been the rumor that's been going around the past day and a half or so. But right now, Trump has his new platform, Truth Social, and it's still not totally perfected, guys, but it is, you know, running for we Apple users. Trump needs to get it onto Androids, and he needs to get it onto the computers also.
Right, right.
That's critical. But there is also talk of Elon Musk starting a brand new platform.
Well, and you know, he's got a couple of nickels to rub together, so he might just do it.
And I have a feeling he might be the most successful platform of anyone.
Well, he certainly has the engineers at his disposal.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, he does.
There's a bunch of people at Twitter that are mad as hell. They're quitting Twitter because Elon Musk is there. Oh my God, Elon Musk. You know, it's absolutely hysterical. Now, I'm going to go on the record right now, right here on Right Side Patriots, and I am going to coin a moniker.
Okay.
I just thought of this as we were talking about this maybe about 2 minutes ago.
Okay.
I want to be a muskrat.
Ah, okay.
I think those of us who appreciate what Elon Musk is doing, not only with Twitter, but with Tesla, with SpaceX, you know, the list goes on and on.
Mm-hmm.
We're muskrats.
Okay.
This is so incredible what we're seeing at Twitter right now. There are people that are jumping ship because it's like, oh my God, if we can't control what people say, what's going to happen in this world? Well, guess what? It's called free speech.
Well, I've got a different moniker, a different one. Nothing wrong with your muskrats.
All right.
How about Muscovites?
How about musketeers?
Might bring too many connotations or, you know, allusions to Disney, which is not the greatest standing.
Those were Mouseketeers over there.
Yeah, Musketeers. I like the my Muscovites better.
Muscovites, Musketeers, yeah. Muskrats. You know, I mean, this is going to get real fascinating over the next couple of weeks because he's like a kid in a candy store right now.
But the difference is, he knows what he's doing.
Yes.
He won't just stuff his face. He will make money off of it. And he actually has the opportunity to bring free speech back to social media.
What, you think he's going to make money on it? Really?
Oh, Elon Musk, you know, he's in it for the money, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. Because he's doing good at the same time he's making money.
He bought enough shares to have almost a 10% stake, the largest stake in Twitter, right?
Right.
The day after he did it, Twitter stock went up, and in one day he made $1 billion profit.
Right. Exactly.
You really think he's going to make money?
Everybody
awesome.
Thought that his stock was going to go down. No, just the opposite. Whose stock did go down then was Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook took a hit.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook took a big hit.
And other, you know, Democrat platforms took some big hits.
Well, and you mentioned Disney a couple of minutes ago. They've taken a hit over the last few days since they outwardly went woke. They've lost 350,000 subscribers to Disney Plus, and they've taken a $2.5 billion hit.
Yeah, and they cannot afford, you know, running Disney and the whole operation is very expensive, and they cannot sustain that kind of hit for a long period of time.
But they're doubling down. They're doubling down. The CEO over there at the Mouse House today came out and said that the current generation is 30 to 40% queerer than the previous generation. So we got to get on this thing and really, really go queer. She says that in the next 5 to 10 years, she wants to see at least half, 50% of all Disney characters either being LGBTQ or a minority skin color.
Oh, this woman is off her rocker. I know, and she's the big honcho, you know, from the, I believe she's from the Disney family, the original family. But she's off her frickin' rocko head. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, I don't know what in the world she's got to piss and bitch and moan about. Disney's number one character is black.
The mouse.
Mickey Mouse is black.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was black when he was in black and white. He's black when he's in color. And I'll tell you, if these dumbass liberals do with Mickey Mouse and Disney what they've done with other companies, they fired Uncle Ben, they fired Aunt Jemima, right, they fired Mrs. Butterworth, they'll fire Mickey.
You know, they continue along this path, especially when the politics in this country shifts back to the right. They're going to find themselves in not good financial shape. In fact, our Governor Ron DeSantis here in Florida, he's thinking of taking away their tax-exempt status for this move of theirs. And Walt Disney would be so against this, he must be turning over in his grave.
Spinning like a lathe.
Yes.
You know, now one thing, we've only got a minute or two left here, and then I got to jet out of here. I got to get to a function. But one thing that you folks may have noticed if you've been tuned in for the whole show, we haven't mentioned Ketanji Jackson Brown, or Brown Jackson. Okay.
Right.
Now, there's a couple of reasons for that. First of all, we've gotten all caught up in all these other topics because we had a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. The other reason we haven't gotten into it is because, Diane, you're writing a great big article on her that's not coming out this next Tuesday, but the Tuesday after.
The Tuesday after. And let me give people a little heads up on what's coming out this Tuesday. And Disney would love me for this. And I say love me in a very sarcastic way. I'm taking on the issue of transgenderism.
Very interesting. I kind of very am, too. I kind of am, too. It's kind of a companion piece coming up next Tuesday. We're going at it from very different angles, but it's, you know, these are going to be great companion pieces for next Tuesday. We'll publish them on Monday. We'll do them on the show on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we will. And isn't that interesting, Craig? My phone just did a noise and it's turned off.
Yeah, you know, you Apple people, I don't know. My little Android is just sitting right here on the desk. Now, I've had somebody trying to call me for the last hour during the show, but you didn't hear any noises because I shut it off. And when you shut off an Android, it's off.
The only thing I can think of is when I picked it up to move it away, maybe inadvertently I turned something back on, but it doesn't matter because we're at the end of the show.
We are. And folks, if you missed any part of it, we covered a lot of territory on this show tonight.
Yes.
So what you want to do tomorrow morning is go to rspradio1.com, click the podcast button, and you can get caught up on all the topics we brought up tonight.
Right. Absolutely. And with that, I'm going to say nighty-night.
Folks, you have yourselves a great weekend. We'll catch up with you again on Tuesday. Bye-bye.